You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Whether you need a battery for your truck, or a battery for your trail camera, or a specialized battery for your rangefinder, or a crazy toy that you bought for your kids, Interstate Batteries has got you covered. Stop into a local Interstate Battery retail store, talk with a specialist, get the battery that you need, and go on about your day. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
My name is Clay Newcomb, and I'm the host of the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast. I'll also be your host into the world of hunting, the icon of North American wilderness, the bear. We'll talk about tactics, gear, conservation, but we'll also bring you into some of the wildest country on the planet, chasing bear. This week, we're at Bear Camp in Arkansas, and we have two Bear Hunting Magazine legends on the podcast. Well, three. Make it three. We've got my dad, Gary Newcomb. You hear me talk about him a lot. We've got James Lawrence, my Arkansas mountain man buddy. And then the third legend is Colby Moorhead himself, the Bear Tech. We're sitting around literally a campfire, and we're at our Arkansas Bear Camp. We talked to my dad and James about a little bit about their hunting. Colby talks about his bear hunt. I'm not going to tell you what happens. He'll tell you what happens. But this is a very fun podcast with a fun crew. I'm holding in my hands right now a CVA muzzleloader. It's an Acura mountain rifle in Max 1 camo. This gun is a breakover. I've just broken it over. It has a breech plug that you can screw out by hand. You don't need any tools, which is pretty revolutionary for muzzleloaders. All the other muzzleloaders I've had, you've had to use a special tool. So you can take out this breech plug in the field. I like this mountain rifle, Acura mountain rifle. It's got a 24.5-inch barrel. It's light, and it has a Cerakote finish on it. I will be using this gun in Arkansas in just a few weeks. I've got to put a scope on it, but hey, check out CVA Muzzleloaders. They've got some incredible products, a full range of muzzleloaders, and an incredible guarantee on all their stuff. We're also getting geared up for some hound hunting this winter. We're getting the squirrel dogs ready. We're getting the coon dogs ready. And check out W Hunting Supply for all your hound-related needs, whether it be Garmin stuff, whether it be leashes and collars, whether it be specialty hound gear and hound merchandise, hats, shirts. Our friends at W Hunting Supply, Buddy Woodbury. Man, if you're buying anything that has to do with dogs, buy it from W and Buddy and his team. Check out our friends as well at the Western Bear Foundation. These guys are a nonprofit hunting conservation organization filling a very special place in the bear world, in our lifestyle of guarding the gate. Check out the Western Bear Foundation. A vital component of this week's hunt in Arkansas was Northwoods Bear Products. We used Northwoods on all of our bear baits. We used some of their gold dust powder. We also used their Gold Rush fryer grease additive. If you're baiting bears, you need to be using commercial scents. It just doesn't make sense not to. And Northwoods Bear Products makes the highest quality, best bear scents around. Check them out at northwoodsbearproducts.net. Also, check out their Instagram and all their social media stuff. Right now, they're posting a bunch of photos of fall bear hunts of people using Northwoods. Check it out. You are going to enjoy this podcast. Gary Newcomb, James Lawrence, Colby, and myself. Man, it's starting to feel like fall.
Yep.
Would y'all say?
Definitely.
Pretty incredible weather for the first weekend of Arkansas bear season. We're sitting around a open fire outside We're in the Ouachita Mountains out here in Arkansas. And Colby, this is a pretty legit setup here.
Yeah.
Our guests.
Yeah.
Super legit because I know he doesn't know it. Now, he knows how much his name comes up on the podcast.
Yeah.
We've got some legendary Bear Hunting Magazine podcast guests.
Yeah.
On the podcast today.
Mm-hmm.
I've got my dad, Gary Newcomb.
Hello. The man, one and only.
I can't hardly do a... It seems your name comes up a lot. You know it, don't you?
Well, I hear it. I hear you lying to the public.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know what? What I think when I hear that is everybody talks about... You know, when I was in business... People would come in and go, my mama told me this. My daddy told me this. I mean, that stuff counts.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're a parent, stuff you're saying will resonate for the rest of your kid's life. They'll be 80 years old and they'll go, my daddy told me something. So I don't think of it as me. I think that's the way we were made.
Yeah.
We're made to think our parents no more than they really do.
Well, let me ask you, did you or were you lying to me all those years?
Oh, I was a genius. No, I mean, I'm different. I'm not like most parents. I mean, I'm a stinking genius, okay? But no, you know, I'm just kidding. But
no, anytime I do a podcast, especially outside of just our bear hunting podcast, your name constantly comes up. Man, the wind has just picked up.
Yep.
It'll be all right. Will it be all right?
We'll figure it out.
Well, if you hear some wind noise, it's because we're...
That's that fall.
Yeah, it's that fall coming. Yeah. Well, hey, the other name that comes up a lot is James Lawrence. How you doing, James?
Doing good.
You
always during bear season.
Yeah. Hello. Man, James, when... Now, you don't listen to the podcast, so... Or at least I don't think you do. So I don't think you... realize how often I end up talking about you. You know, your name has been mentioned on the Meat Eater podcast, which is the biggest podcast in the land. Mm-hmm. And your name was mentioned not directly, but I talked about my dad. But no, everybody that follows what we do knows these two guys right here. And of course they know Colby Moorhead, the bear tech.
Yep.
Which Colby's going to be one of the stars of this conversation.
Yeah.
Don't tell him why. But now, James, how long have we been bear hunting and having kind of a bear camp?
Several years now. I don't know when we started, really.
Yeah.
Look forward to it every year, this time of year, especially.
Yeah.
For bear season. Deer season used to be now it's bear. I love the way we hunt, the way we do bait.
Yeah.
And get kids involved, mm-hmm. yours in particular. That means a lot to me. I enjoy them as much as I do hunting myself. I'd rather them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I still enjoy it, but it's just seeing what we can come up with, the baiting that we do, how we do it.
Yeah. Well, you grew up here, so we're not going to say exactly where we're at, but we're in just a little rural community in the Ouachitas. And James, you've been here your whole life. Yep. You're 72?
Yep,
72. Dad, are you 72?
72.
When's your birthday?
March 17th.
1948.
48.
When's your birthday?
November the 27th.
48?
47.
47.
47, you're a little older.
Just a little bit older. Yeah.
It's, you know, you're smarter than me.
Hey, you were about to say it shows.
That six months made a lot of difference. You learned a lot of stuff I missed out on.
James, I think the first time we baited bears back in here was in 2010. I think it was 2010. And you let me and Lee Walt hunt your piece of property over there.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And Dad was helping us bait, and we came in, and Lee ended up killing a bear over there. And we came back, and you hadn't even told us that you were bear hunting. You just let us bear hunt over there, and I didn't know you that well at that time.
And now the way I knew you is because I wrote an article about you that was in Arkansas Sportsman. And I was going to write an article about you for North American Whitetail, and then you nearly died.
Yeah.
Tried really. I had permission his name has escaped me, the longtime editor of North American Whitetail. What's his name? Golly, I'm embarrassing myself. Anyway, like I was going to write an article about your shed horn buck of 1964, finding these shed horns and finally killing this deer when you were just a boy while your dad and uncles were off hunting without you. You stayed home and still hunted this deer and killed it. And then you got real sick. And that kind of, we just weren't able to do the article. But you're back.
Can I say something about James?
Yeah.
You know, I'm a self-taught hunter. No one in my family deer hunted. So, you know, I'd never profess to be a great deer hunter, but I love people who knew how to deer hunt. I started hearing James Lawrence, Daniel Lance, legendary figures, and I always wanted to meet James, but I thought, man, this guy... I mean, this is like meeting Daniel Boone. It'll never happen. So Clay came to me one day and he said, "Dad, I want to meet the best hunter in Polk County." And I knew that James would be on the target list, but I had no way of connecting Clay to James. Mm-hmm. So we went through Joe.
Yeah.
Joe Lyles.
Uh-huh.
I said, "Joe's a real good hunter." And Joe is raised here, and he will put you on the guy.
Well, what I was trying to do, and this is a different article, is I was trying to write an article about mountain hunters, you know, just hunting in national forest, just hunting in the mountains. And that's when I called Joe Lyles, and Joe Lyles is a good hunter, but he told me about you. And so, I just went and knocked on James' door, and we've been best buddies ever since.
You know, he was just an iconic figure to guys like me. I mean, everybody knew the name, but you never had the opportunity to meet the guy unless you were local. So anyway, it was a pleasure to get to know what a humble guy and wonderful person James is.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wouldn't be that humble. I would be telling you how good of a great hunter I was.
If you'd killed that many deer, you'd have been telling everybody.
Me monkey with me, I'm too good.
Man, hey, okay, this is the James segment. Yesterday, we were in James's garage, and he's had to expand his whitetail wall because he filled the whole wall up in his garage, so now he's hanging them out on the porch. But the old set of deer from when he was even a kid through the 70s and 80s is all in his garage. And these are things that I wouldn't really notice because I would expect James to remember a lot about those deer. But Misty took note. My wife was standing there, and I just randomly went over and touched a couple of deer horns, if you remember. There's one that had big old brow tines, and these are just skull plates screwed on the wall. And I touched a big old buck, and James said, he told us right where he killed it. He said, "You know, I killed that back there," and it was, told us the date.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't think anything about it. And I just went to the next one and said, "Man, that one right there is a cool deer." And James would say, "Man, that was in 84.
Mm-hmm.
And Gene and I had packed back in on the horse and da-da-da. And Misty came back and she said, "He remembered every one of those deer."
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that was pretty cool.
I hope I don't lose that.
Yeah.
I do.
And yeah.
I won't say 100%, but I know there's a story behind all of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
If I can remember them, so far I can.
Yeah.
Well, that one you was talking about was a special one anyway. That at the time was the biggest deer I'd ever seen, body-wise.
Really?
Body-wise.
Oh, okay.
And he had that unusual set of horns, the high guards or brow tines, whatever you call them. It was extreme.
Yeah.
Different people looked at it and they said, "That's G2. It don't have brow tines or eye guard."
Mm.
What do you think?
Oh, I'd say those are, as a Boone and Crockett scorer, those would be G1s.
Right.
They'd be brow tines.
Right.
They're probably 9 inches long, a pair of brow tines that they curve up, just kind of match each other in symmetry. on just a big old 8-point, big gnarly 8-point he killed out here.
Yeah. Well, you know, we don't, back then, we didn't have a lot of deer. It's like everywhere. You know, I'm not saying that you were handicapped, but, you know, you didn't have a lot of deer in the 70s and 80s, and
sure before that.
And so every area has their tradition of what a trophy buck is. And James was killing the big bucks. Now, if you compare it to an Iowa guy, just like you, I mean, there's no comparison.
No, even Missouri.
But
Or even South Arkansas, as far as that, you know, the farmland down there, really nice buck, big bucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These mountain bucks, there's an exception once in a while, but that's a good average.
You know, County has killed a few Boone and Crockett.
Exactly.
And you over the years, about every 10 years, there'll be a 160-inch buck that killed. In fact, when you were a kid, I was on, I forget the name of the guy, but it was a 167-inch buck on a particular road that goes through the mountains, and I actually hunted that deer. But, you know, I just can't stand to hunt big bucks for some reason. I mean, really. I mean, it just seems I sat on a bucket one Sunday morning.
He's not kidding. He'd rather go sit where he sees a bunch of deer.
You know, I don't have patience. I don't, you know, so many things go against me for killing big bucks, even though I've had plenty of chances. But this buck had huge rubs. I mean, I was just like going nuts. And I could follow this buck for over 100 yards on a trail that you knew it was this buck.
And for around here, that's pretty rare.
And you know where it was. I'll tell you, I mean, you know, I mean, it was just crazy. I'm going like, I've never seen this obvious of a sign. And 2 weeks later, as soon as gun season opened or whatever, the guy killed it. I never even put a stand up. I sat on a bucket one morning before church in a honeysuckle patch. And that, you know, I just thought, so, you know, I'm not a great hunter. But I've killed a lot of deer.
Yeah.
You know, I've killed a whole lot of deer, a lot more deer than a lot of people, but nothing that you want to, you just eat it. You don't put it on the wall.
You're really good at killing a deer the way you wanted to kill them, with a bow on public land. And we're doing it back before many people were doing it. Well, back before, many people were doing it. You were doing it.
Yeah. You know, my buddies would be raised up gun hunters. Their whole family gun hunted. My family didn't gun hunt. They couldn't kill a deer with a bow. And I could, and it was weird. It was really weird because I didn't know much, but I just knew where you could go kill doe, and bucks would come in, and you know. But anyway, it was kind of funny back in the 70s how the guys that should have been good hunters could not kill deer with a bow, you know.
Yeah.
So, but I've never, you know, I just don't kill big stuff. You know, it's too hard to get them out of the woods.
You know, there's larger factors at play. Hard to get out of the woods. No, there's larger factors at play to what you're talking about. And to give somebody context, you were killing any deer with a bow back before people were killing deer. And so that became really valued to you, just to kill a deer with a bow on public land in Arkansas. And our gun seasons start in the rut. Our gun seasons are pretty liberal here. And so our gun seasons are starting the first week of November. So you had basically the month of October to kill deer, and you were just interested in filling your tags.
That's
it.
You know?
And so it just never became that big of a priority to
kill
a buck.
I would put my archery equipment up November 5th. I mean, every now and then I'd go out. But very seldom, maybe once every 5 years, I might hunt sometime in December. But, and you know, that's where you set your goals. I mean, it's just a truism. Clay's heard me say this a lot about life. You set your goals low, that's what you're going to achieve. You know, if I'd have said, I want to kill big bucks, I probably, even though I've had plenty of opportunities, you know, I probably would have killed a bunch of big bucks.
Yeah.
Instead of killing a lot of small deer. I probably would have killed a few big bucks, but I don't want to do that. It's too boring to me. Really, I mean, I'm just not geared to be, I'm geared to be a scouter. That's it.
I'm good at scouting.
Yeah.
I always allowed patience was the name of the game, and older I get, the less patience I have. I could go to stand in the morning with a light and leave that stand at night with a light. And my granddad always said 3 days in the same spot would kill a deer. So sometimes he's right, sometimes he's wrong. But if you sit there from daylight to dark, which I can't do anymore, that was one of my secret deals, was just the fact that
3 days.
Find a good scrape line. And we used to, back in the 70s, I kill more deer over scrapes. 9 o'clock in the morning, as a rule, I'd go to work 10. I'd be there till 9. And I don't know what happened. It don't work that way anymore. But back in the 70s, you find a good scrape, you sat on it daylight to dark, in 3 days, you'd have him. So that way, you just look for the biggest track, the biggest hook push. So.
What do you mean it doesn't work? You're being literal.
I can't scrape hunt anymore. I mean, I can't do any good scrape hunting.
You just don't see the deer?
I don't have any activity. I can sit there, well, I didn't have cameras then. We didn't have cameras.
Yeah.
We just went by the sign, you know, in the tracks. If it had cameras back then, I wouldn't have been sitting there because I wouldn't be getting no pictures. It's always night. And they don't run scrapes. Of course, we got a lot more deer now than we had then. But back in the 70s, scrape hunting was the way to go.
You know, I think there's something biological in what you've said, because I've heard some really good local hunters, y'all would know who I'm talking about, tell me the same thing. As they said, I can't explain it, but they noted the trend over a long period of time is that the buck sign is different than it used to be. And I wonder if it had to do with low deer density and then high deer density, because now we have a lot more deer, and maybe somehow that's affected the way they're using and making sign. I mean, it sounds crazy, but I've heard too many people say what you just said.
Well, it was so much fun, because you find the scrape, a good scrape. I mean, you don't just... You know, they make them, but you find a main scrape that he's been frequenting, twisted limbs over the scrape.
Sit there for 3 days and you kill him.
You know, I used to have that theory that 3 days, but I could never sit on the stand 3 days.
Well, it worked for me back in the 70s. It don't anymore. But in the 70s, that was
the scrape line important to you?
I try to – I always call them a main scrape. If you find a scrape, scrape's a scrape. You find a main scrape, he frequents it, and it's not just one deer either. You sit there for 3 days, you'll obviously three or four bucks come to the same scrape, which I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But I would find what I call a main scrape one.
Big one.
Big scrape. These little pawed places, you can sit on those. You might, but you find a main scrape. I can't now. I've tried it. I don't have the patience to sit in one spot on a scrape now. So now I've got a camera so I can tell.
Yeah.
But then I didn't have, this may sound crazy, but I took twine. I found the main scrape. Didn't have any. It was over by the cabin. And I had time that year. I took some twine around the scrape, hung it in bushes around the scrape, all a complete circle. And then I would watch that the next morning. It'd be up when I'd leave at night. The next morning, you could see where he come down and broke a little twine, opened up the scrape, and left. I didn't have a time element, but I knew I was there from daylight to dark. I don't know how many days I'd hunted it, but I give up at noon and walk down to my cabin. I wasn't a quarter of a mile from my cabin. And I get back to my stand, and there's the twine broke where he'd come off the mountain, opened up the scrape, and where he'd went off the side of that ridge that I was on. So basically, that deer was watching me. I believe that deer was up on the mountain above me, either smelt me or seen me, because he opened that scrape up while I was gone for 30 minutes for lunch break.
You know, I've had that happen
and
twice.
I quit. That was the last time that I really and truly diehard set on scrape. If I'd had cameras, it wouldn't take long to figure it out, time element. But that's the only way I could figure out where he was coming from. When he come off the mountain, he broke that little twine, and I just had circled him.
Yeah.
And he done that while I was going to lunch. So so he whipped me.
You know, we had that happen down in southern Arkansas. We found scrapes that were like the size of your truck. I mean, I can't remember. They were just unbelievable to a young hunter. You're just going, you got to be kidding, man. This is crazy. We would leave, maybe find it at 10. This happened one time. Find it maybe 10 o'clock. I'm just making that up. Then we go back to camp, mess around, come back that afternoon, and the scrapes worked. You know, so that two-hour period worked. And then one day I had a I like to hunt acorns, and I'm sitting here watching a spike buck eat all my acorns. And finally, I run him off, and when I run him off, I look, and there's a huge buck,
yeah,
one of our old
that.
Spots,
yeah.
Had been sitting up on the side of that hill watching the spike eat all those acorns, probably about ready to come down. And, I mean, yeah. he was one of the really big bucks in that area. Had some big rubs around in different places. And anyway, that's just hunting.
That's how they get big. Mm-hmm. They let the little ones go in first.
But if you can find a doe in heat early, just one, I mean, it just goes crazy. The woods goes crazy. And you know, I've only had it happen in 40 years of bow hunting. I've only had it happen a couple times where a doe would come in around the 20th.
Of October.
Of October. And I mean, you know, you just, I remember Clay was off in college and he came home. I said, Clay, you got to get down here. You got to hunt this buck. And, you know, I had a shot 32 steps. And, you know, I just shot under it. It was huge, 12 point, one of those beautiful 12 points, you know, just bam, bam, bam. And 20th, 23rd of October, doe comes in. Next Saturday, I mean, I wait a full week to hunt it. The next Saturday, the buck comes in again. I had a 10 point, an 8 point, a 6 point one Sunday morning before
no 4 point?
Before church. No. And,
six, 18,
I mean, it was just crazy, that particular spot. And this buck would come up and click. I might have told this.
Yeah, I think
you know,
did.
The clicking buck. I mean, it was just, I learned more in that one setting, I guess, than I've ever learned in my life about deer hunting.
You know, I wonder how much our knowledge of deer hunting is anecdotal, and the word anecdotal meaning based upon experience, not necessarily based upon science or based upon perceived experience. Like, you know, because like we have all these experiences in the woods and we come to a conclusion pretty quickly. Like predators, humans in general, we perceive data, you know, like you perceive something that's going on, and then you come to a conclusion of what happens, and then you build a strategy around that conclususion. And if it works, then your conclusion is validated. But I think sometimes we perceive data, what's happening, we come to a conclusion that may not be 100% right, but we use that and we're successful and build kind of ideologies that maybe aren't even fully true, but they kind of work for us a lot of the time. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think hunters do that a lot because we're not dealing in hard science. We're dealing in perceived. I mean, it's not like we're logging entries and we're actually conducting research when we're out there. It's all anecdotal. We're sitting in a stand and we think this happened, but really maybe something else happened. But regardless, it doesn't matter because guys like you and Dad figure out how to make it work, you know. And so I find that the people, and what I've learned from both of you guys, is that get a strategy and stick to it and become highly proficient at whatever method you have that works, and you'll be a successful hunter. Like Dad hunting like white oak acorns on public land. It's like he had that down to a science. You have down to a science slip hunting the national forest and moving through timber and monitoring buck sign. And I mean, you just can't hardly keep James from killing a buck. James doesn't know this, but every year he says the same thing. Every year for the last 10 years, this time of year, he says, man, I can't find a buck. There's no bucks around here. And then by the end of the season, he's got two big racks hanging on the porch that he killed. Now, I wrote something about James the other day in the magazine. I said he has an uncanny ability to just draw out game in places where other people can't. So, James, you can keep telling me there's no big bucks around, but you're going to find one.
He's a liar, man. The guy's lying.
Maybe that's what it is. You're holding back on us, man.
Yeah, give me a break.
Hey, I gave him some intel yesterday where a big buck was because we saw one across the road in National Forest.
Oh, really?
A good buck, yep. But he says there's a lot of people hunting over there. So, no, yeah, well, hey, we're here to talk about bear camp, but all this, to me, this is a good context to talk about bear camp because our bear hunting here in Arkansas is supplementary to our deer hunting. That's just the truth. Like, we don't bear hunt like this for the whole season. You know, we bear hunt like this for a few days or maybe a week because these bears leave our baits, and it's so time-consuming, so energy-consuming to keep these baits going. It's like we have this flurry of activity that leads up to this one weekend where we can all get here, where the kids can be here, and we have this fun weekend. This week, this year, we stayed at a real nice cabin out here.
Yeah.
That James built this cabin. It runs off solar. James Carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
James is a carpenter and more than that. And he and his son hooked up all the solar, and this is a super cool place. But why is this weekend special, James? Like, why do you like this so much?
Well, that's a hard question, but I look forward to it from one year to the next. When we're slowing down from this, you know, 3 or 4 days, I hate to see that go, but I think about the next year. There's 3 or 4 days here, or a week maybe, that we put a lot of effort into it, and it's worth every bit that we put into it.
Yeah.
I enjoy kids experiencing what I did when I was a kid. A lot of people don't get to do that nowadays.
Yeah.
But a few days of bear season, just see the smile on people's face.
Yeah.
Like the Brent last night, he couldn't wipe that grin off his face.
Yeah. Well, we've got, I think we're working with, between David's, we're working with, let me hold that. We've got a problem with having these old guys on the podcast as they get up, move around. Dad's getting his coffee. I think we've got 5 bait sites out here, and we can only bait on private land in Arkansas. Mm-hmm. Everybody
right.
knows that.
Right.
And it's funny. Everybody's heard us talk about these baits. Some baits are just prone to have big bears, and some aren't. Our baits out here kind of hit and miss with big, real big bears, mm-hmm. but we always have bears. And let's just start. So I was in, everybody heard the last couple podcasts, and me and Colby were in Montana, mm-hmm. elk hunting. And yep. so James was doing all the work for us. And we kind of, you know, I'm kind of in charge of gathering bait, and I bring it down here. And then James is kind of in charge of keeping the baits going because he's living, you know, he lives pretty close to these places. And so before I went to Montana, I went and got some bait. James also got some bait because I couldn't locate any bread up yeah. where I'm from. So James had to drive. But been baiting these bears for about 3 weeks coming up to this, I think. And so I brought 3 kids down here, Bear, River, and Shepherd. And Now, Bear Newcomb has made a commitment to not kill a bear over bait.
He's sticking to it.
And to try to kill a bear in the National Forest.
I respect that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I really do.
For his first bear.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I talked to him about 3 years ago because I knew we could put him on a bear bait and get him to kill a bear. And there were several factors that went into it. But with Bear in particular, I felt like that he had enough internal drive. And I just, you know, every kid's different. And I just wanted to give him a goal that he could move towards. And he had hunted with me quite a bit out in the mountains. And he loved it. Like he, man, as a parent, you built this inside of me, Dad, is that you shape the value system of your kids. You show them what has value. And hunting bear over bait has incredible value. But with bear in particular, we've hunted National Forest for deer and bear. And I really emphasize that to him that, hey, this is a tough way to hunt them. This is a difficult way. You got to be a woodsman to do this. You got to have persistence. You can't think about this in terms of a single season. You got to think about this in terms of multiple seasons. And I could see he was latching on to this. And I said, I tell you what, and I let him make the decision, but I said, what if you didn't kill a bear over bait? And that's a tough decision for a, he made that commitment when he was 12.
Mm-hmm.
He's 14 now. That's a tough decision for a 12-year-old to not take his bow and go out here and sit on a, not a for sure deal, because it's not, but a pretty for sure deal.
Mm-hmm.
While his brothers and sisters are killing bears, mm-hmm, and getting validated by people and getting pictures put up on Facebook by their mama. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And bear just every year, just like, nope, I'm going to kill one out in the mountains. I'm going to, mm-hmm, kill one out in the mountains. And that's the decision that he's made. So we got a tough row to hoe to get him on a bear out there, but we're going to try. But River and Shepherd hunted this weekend. But who got the hot seat was Mr. Colby, the Bear Tech Moorhead.
Yep.
Colby, so this is your first time to come here.
Yeah.
And I tell you that you're in a coveted chair here, brother.
Yeah.
What's it been like for you?
Oh, it's been great. I think the thing I was looking most forward to was meeting James. You know, hear his name so much around the office, and I was like, this guy, is he for real? No.
We find out he's been lying to us about these deer. He knew where they were all the time.
Yeah, yeah. No. Meeting James has definitely been a highlight of the weekend, and just the kind of guy he is. Like, not even knowing like all the history about all the bucks he's killed and everything, just like, meetings when you meet somebody as quality, it's just like that makes the trip worth it, you know. And so I think for me that's been a highlight. And then, I mean, yeah, getting to hunt with Shepherd was awesome too, you know. We sat
so
together.
Describe your hunt then.
Yeah, so my hunt, we had a bait that we decided to hunt it in the morning, but we had to watch and make sure there weren't any bears up there, so we stayed back probably.
Well, the wind is howling, acorns are falling, leaves are blowing.
Yeah. So we probably got within like 200 yards of the bait and glassed for a little while and saw that there was a bear there. So we had to wait for it to clear out. And with this particular bait, we were thinking maybe if we got one early enough, we'd have an opportunity to get another one. So we thought that we could
maybe kill two bears.
Maybe, yeah.
We had a stand in this particular spot. It was a big platform stand. We're on private land.
Yeah.
You guys are hunting within walking distance of where we're staying.
Yeah.
So that's pretty unique.
Yeah.
I mean, they're literally walking up the hill 100 yards to a bear bait.
Yeah, yeah. It hasn't been bad at all.
As a matter of fact, you guys had it really easy.
We had it really easy. And we had a lot of space. The hardest thing was we didn't know we needed to take chairs. So we had to deal with the hard plywood.
Poor.
And I know.
Nobody told you.
I know. I mean, I thought we were going to be dealing with strict luxury, and we just...
I didn't think about it.
I didn't think about it either.
I just envy on the big the platform stand.
Yeah.
Didn't know you didn't have chairs. I did.
We endured. No, it wasn't bad at all. No, it was just fun hanging out with Shep out there. And it's just not often that I hunt with someone else inside the stand. And Shep and I have been you know, playing basketball together and stuff. And so it was just fun to do something different. And yeah.
So you hunted the morning?
Hunted the morning.
So opening morning, you saw a bear from about 100 and something yards away.
Yeah, the hunt was on before we even got in the stand.
And hey, that's exactly what I tell people to do, Colby, is that if you're hunting bears in the mornings, you got to be careful because the bear's going to be there all night.
Mm-hmm.
And if y'all had walked in there before daylight with flashlights, you would have spooked that bear.
Oh, for sure.
So you waited till daylight, and yeah. Sure enough, there was a bear there, and you let it walk off.
Yeah.
And then you went to the stand, and then you hunted the whole morning, and it never came back.
Never came back. And then I think we could have stalked the bear, but we didn't want to blow it out. We didn't know what the wind would do. So yeah. We just hunted the morning until about 10:30, and then just came out and went back that afternoon around 4. And just sat there, and that bear came out eventually and was real, like, nervy. And then it left, and then it came back just like, I mean, just like it had done this a million times, like it had this whole thing, like it was smelling the wind and just, like, real nervy. And so it finally came in, and we were able to get a shot off on it. And anyways, looked like a great shot. You know,
yeah. 20 yards.
Yeah, 20 yards exactly.
Now, you know, I'll give the abbreviated version. The bear, at probably an hour and a half before dark, they saw the bear pacing up on the ridge, which yeah. is real typical. These bears are coming in downwind of these baits and staging out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so this bear smelled them and knew they were there.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't coming in. And then some yard dogs it's actually about a half a mile away.
Yeah.
But started barking. We didn't tell you this, James.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
The dogs actually came up there.
Oh, yeah. Ate some of the bait and everything.
Yeah, dogs, man. Yep.
Didn't know that.
And so, but the dogs were still over there across the road. They started barking, and the bear
just left out.
Just took off.
Yeah, up the hill.
But the dogs quit barking, and
bear came back.
The bear ends up coming back.
Yeah, like 15 minutes later.
Yeah.
And so I was able to get a shot off, and we played it back, and it looked like a tin ring. It's like that bear's just laying up there, you know. And so, but Shep, he was like, I think it might have been a little far back, and we think he saw like my fletching or something. So the way the bear acted wasn't typical. Like it ran up the hill a little bit, stood there for a minute, and then just moseyed off like nothing had ever happened. And so that didn't make sense with like what I saw or what my shot did, but it made sense with what Shep thought he saw. And so I was like,
so the bear acted like it was hit far back.
Yeah, I was thinking it's like
he felt like it was a double lung.
Yeah, I thought it was a great shot, and Shep, and so I was like, well, maybe I didn't see it right because that bear was kind of acting like that. So we had filmed it, and so I punched in on it, and I mean it looked like a perfect shot, and so. I'm feeling really good.
Yeah.
And so we, anyways, we looked the video a couple times. Oh, it's a great shot. That's where you want to put it. We go up there to track it, thinking it's going to be an easy track. And we're not finding a whole lot of blood. And then we start finding a little bit of blood and a little bit more blood. And that bear laid down.
Let's stop right there. You came back to camp.
Yeah, I didn't touch the arrow or anything. I just backed out.
And
I didn't know.
By the time you got back here, my mom and dad were here.
Yeah.
James and David had come. There were probably 15 people here.
Mm-hmm.
Within Wide Oak Acre and on the tin roof. I don't know if they could hear that. probably 15 people here. And when we went up there, I bet there were 8 of us tracking that bear, which honestly is not an ideal situation.
Yeah,
but nobody wanted to stay back.
Yeah. It's too easy. Let's just walk up the hill.
Everybody was just like, let's go.
Yeah.
If it had been a little bit different situation, I probably would have said, "Hey, let's just get about 3 of us and go up there." But
yeah.
The kids wanted to go,
yeah.
And so anyway, so we go up there thinking it's going to be a 50-yard trail job.
Yeah,
and we don't find it. Dad, he just tin ring that bear.
He did
tin ringed it, and there was no blood, and the bear didn't hardly act like it was hit. And we finally found blood 20, 30 yards. I mean, started finding good blood probably 30 yards from where the bear was shot.
Mm-hmm.
And it was deep red, kind of like muscly cavity type blood. And I thought, well, he's hit it
Yeah.
Low.
Well, and even the arrow didn't look.
The arrow was almost clean. We're going to describe something to you here that's typical of bear, which is mysterious.
That was the cleanest pass through I've ever seen.
Yeah, the arrow, if he'd have just put it in his quiver, you probably wouldn't have been able to pick out which arrow had been shot.
No.
And
did that impress you?
Yes, it did.
Yes. Yeah.
And success. So we finally get on decent blood and we trail this bear and we find where he laid on the right up against a big pine tree. And I said, oh man, this bear bedded down. That's not good, because it had bedded down, wasn't laying there. But we saw good blood coming out of the bed. So, you know, it'd been 2.5-3 hours. And so we're like, well, let's just go a little bit further. Mm-hmm. We go another 10-12 yards and there's another bed. And we go, oh man, that's not good. But we see good blood and the bear starts to turn downhill. And I'm telling the kids to get back. And, you know, I think probably the most dangerous thing we do as bear hunters is trail wounded game, especially at night. I mean, that's how you could get chewed up. I mean, of all mm-hmm. the things we do, aside from driving on the highway, getting chewed up by a wounded bear is a real possibility, especially with something like that. So I'm thinking about that with all the kids. And mm-hmm. so I'm saying, get back, everybody. And we're trying to track this bear. And anyway, we go down another 10 yards and there's another bed. And finally, I say, that's it. We got to get out of here. This bear is alive.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all back out. And to make a long story short, mm-hmm. we go track another two bears.
Yeah.
Not one. We tracked Brent's bear and Aaron Marshall's bear.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we get back here, and we'll talk about those two.
Yeah.
But we get back here at
11 something, probably.
Oh, it was later than that, wasn't it?
Was it?
No, when we started, it's about
11. 11:30.
Okay, we get back here.
Because Gerald was leaving a little after 11.
Yeah. Okay. About 11 o'clock, we go back mm-hmm. up there, and that bear had ran 15 yards past where he last was. So, I mean.
Mm. Well, it laid down one more time by some big
bear. Bedded four times in probably 60, 70 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do a necropsy. That's a new word, James, that we've learned. It's not an autopsy is specifically for a human. Is that right, Colby?
Yeah.
So if you are examining the internal organs of a dead human, it's called an autopsy.
Yeah.
If you're examining an animal, it's called a necropsy.
Yeah.
That's our understanding.
Yeah, I've done it on a horse before with a vet.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a necropsy.
So we're curious as to where he hit this bear. And so we open it up real, real delicately. And the bear was hit in the lower portion of the lungs. They had double lung shot, and two of those slick trick blades raked down the heart. It actually cut the heart and hit two lungs. And that bear bedded four times and was bleeding this, you know, dark maroon blood. I mean, just still. Now, did the bear die in the amount of time that it was supposed to? Yes. The bear died within 100 yards. That's normal. The blood was not normal. The bedding down was not normal. And the way the bear acted was pretty abnormal, because it ran off real fast and then it just walked. Usually you double lung them, they do just like a death run.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of weird things about it, and I don't know what to say other than just every bear is different. I think a lot of blood trails have to do with the amount of fat a bear has, and we've been talking about this year how every bear we've skinned has had an incredible amount of fat.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Hey, you know, I'm sure this is not right, but this is what I think. That bear did not even know it was hit. It's like mm-hmm. a bee sting, and it goes, it jumps. And it takes off running, and it looks around, and he thinks, well, there's no bee,
other bear.
And so it just mm-hmm. says, man, I don't feel good. I think I'm going to take a nap. And then it gets restless, and it goes, you know, I think, you know, I want to get away from here. And I don't think the bear knew it was even hit.
Yeah.
Yeah. But wouldn't you say it's abnormal for a double lung, heart shot animal to bed four times in 70 yards?
Well, very, very. But The animal probably died, like you said, in the appropriate amount of time. You know, I mean, it died within 3 minutes, 8 minutes, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But every time it would bed down, it would think, I'm not feeling good.
I've got it. And it just all came together for me. That the arrow was in the very bottom of the lungs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so it still had a lot of its lungs. I heard somebody talking the other day about how not all liver shots are created equal. If you just nick the liver, if you dead center the liver. So I think that arrow went through a pretty, I mean, any part of the lung is vital, mm-hmm. but it went through the very lower section of the lung and mm-hmm. it just scratched the heart.
Mm-hmm.
I think that bear just had a little bit more life in it, even though it was very much so mortally wounded.
Mm-hmm.
You're what do y'all right. think? I agree.
I agree
with that.
Yeah. Well, for your first Arkansas bear.
Yeah.
You've killed a bear up in Canada?
Yeah, yeah. My first state
bear. Man,
we're
dodging smoke here.
Yeah, I'm getting smoked out. Yeah, my first U.S. bear.
Yeah, so you killed a bear in Canada. Were you excited?
Yeah. Yeah. After it finally was like, oh, yeah, it was good.
Oh, there's always drama, man. Yeah. You wonder if you killed him or not.
Hey, I would like to say that the picture of those two bear, and with bear, the human bear,
yeah,
with his 8-point buck there, was one of the prettiest bear pictures I've seen. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was beautiful. You'll probably see it
in the
magazine.
Did you see it, James?
That's priceless. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they'll see it in Bear Hunting Magazine.
That's cool.
Well, and so now that's a great segue into where those other animals came from. So Brent Reeves, our buddy Brent Reeves, who's been on the podcast a lot, Brent was hunting over here a couple miles. And now Brent wasn't really part of the camp that much because he just drove in real quick and started hunting. But he shows up at camp and says, hey, I killed a bear.
Yeah.
And so you'd killed a bear. He'd killed a bear.
Yeah.
And so we go over to help Brent, all of us, just a whole mob of people, go over to help Brent track his bear. And he had heard it death moan.
5 times.
Yeah. So Brent's killed 2 bears and both of them have death moaned. I can't remember the last time a bear I killed death moaned. For real.
Your first bear did. Yeah. We remember that.
Yeah. Yeah, Dad was with me, the first bear I killed, and it death moaned. But so we go over there, and when we get there, some of our other friends, this is just a small, tight-knit community. That's the answer to, we get over there, and on the side of the road is a truck that we recognize, and it's, they wouldn't mind us saying their names. It was Aaron Marshall and his dad, Ken, and they say, well, we've shot a bear, and it's funny because Aaron listens to this podcast and he told me where he shot it. And he said they'd listen to, I can't remember which podcast they listened to. Well, we find Brent's bear. I'm going to come back to Aaron because we learned some stuff on his bear as well. We find Brent's bear relatively easy because it had only run about 40 yards and it was a very nice boar.
Yeah.
We think 350 plus.
James found it.
Yeah, we were all over the hillside. Dad, this bear, there's just almost a straight cliff, and we find this bear wrapped up around kind of a tree, about a 2-inch sapling on the side of this cliff. And Brent and I get to the bear, and I pick up its head to look at it, and we're high-fiving. And when I picked up its head, the body shifts. And that bear just goes to the bottom. I mean, just disappears. Poof! And goes all the way down the creek.
It was a bobsledder.
Yeah. And so we relocated we relocated to the creek. And so Brent just made a great double lung hit, you know, mid body, you know, dead center in the lungs. The bear didn't go far.
Mm-hmm.
And so then Aaron had shot a bear, and it was his first bear, and it was just a little ways up the road. And so we said, well, let's all go help Aaron track his bear. And so we go up there, and we track the bear, and it was almost identical to your blood trail.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Two in one night.
Yeah.
Weird.
Just kind of a mystery what happened. It was this deep red blood. Found multiple beds within 100 yards. And finally, after the third bed, and it had been like 5 hours since he shot it, so we waited the appropriate time, which that's the biggest thing is give him time. And we, at the third bed, I was like, we got to get out of here, guys. This is, we just got to come back in the morning.
And it was getting real thick.
Yeah. And so that's what we did. We all dropped out. And then Aaron and them went back this morning and found the bear 20 yards from where we stopped.
Before we turned around.
Right. Yeah. And so they came by this morning and had the bear in the back of the truck. And yep. we helped them skin it. The bear, it's been cool. So the bear was in good shape. So they were able to, you know.
Do you have any safety tips on tracking a bear like that? Is it legal to carry a pistol? It's dangerous. I think back about that bear we tracked in Oklahoma, how crazy that was. We were out there, this bear, you know, I thought later, you know, man, I mean, it's amazing more people aren't hurt tracking a bear at night.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, you got to track them.
Yeah. You know, the only safety tip I would give is, if it's legal to carry a sidearm, do it. And in most places, it would be for tracking a bear. It is here. We can carry it. You know, I had a warden one time. I specifically asked him in Arkansas if I could carry a sidearm. And he said, what kind of sidearm? And basically, he was like, if you're carrying a 270, then that's not okay. And I said, I'm carrying a 10-millimeter Glock with a 4-inch barrel. And he's like, that's fine. So his, in Arkansas at least, his ideology, this one warden, was just carry a gun that shows intent. You know, don't carry your 300 Win mag with a scope on it during archery season out in the woods. But if you're carrying a sidearm, you know, a pistol, short barrel pistol, you're probably okay. And now, somebody needs to check with their warden. But I usually don't carry a sidearm around here, but a lot of people do, and it's probably a good idea too. So there's our three bears.
Yeah.
That we had, and then Bear's buck. You had to. Mm-hmm. So this, we got this cool photo of Colby's bear, Brent's bear, and then Bear Newcomb, my son, had because he wasn't bear hunting over bait.
Mm-hmm.
We let him deer hunt. James put him on a buck.
Yeah,
and the first 2 hours of daylight, Bear had shot a nice 8-point buck with a crossbow.
Mm-hmm.
He was supposed to get a compound bow, but it hadn't come in because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And so Bear had killed a buck, so we got the buck and the two bears, and just a great weekend, man.
Mm-hmm.
Question. You know, I'm not much of a bear hunter. In fact, I'm not a bear hunter. I enjoy it, but I don't do it much, if ever. But when I looked at the bear Kobe killed, that shot looked perfect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But technically, it was low based on what y'all are saying.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, maybe when Clay does the magazine, he might even circle that and show where he shot that bear. Because, I mean, it was perfect.
Mm-hmm. It was 6 inches up from the silhouette of the bottom of the bear.
When you looked at it, did you think the shot was perfect?
Oh, yeah.
But it was low.
It was low.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that is crazy. And your observation is pretty interesting, too, that shooting low in the lung would allow that bear to live another 3 minutes or 5 minutes.
And that's a good way to look at it. An animal living another 3 minutes and having a lot of energy in that 3-minute time frame can be the difference in finding it or not.
Mm. And, you know, that bear was reacting to its body. You know, it was going, man, I don't feel good.
I need to move. I need to go get an aspirin. I need to do something. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
you think just, they have aspirin out here?
So anyway,
James gives it to him in the bait.
Yeah. Pretty intriguing deal, really. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to be learned from that shot, I think.
Well, yeah. Man, people ought to go back and listen to if they have questions on shot placement. I tell you what, I've been in a lot of bear camps, and wounded bears are a real deal. They're just so different than whitetails. And I mean, I don't want to go into all the details of shot placement on this one, but it's nuanced. You better make sure you got your ducks in a row before you pull a trigger on a bear.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you know what I would say, but I wouldn't do it. I'd follow your instructions. But when you see a shot like Kobe had, and you know it's a good shot, go ahead and stay with the bear. You wait 3 hours, the bear's dead. Mm. I mean, he's dead as a stinking hammer when y'all turned around.
Yeah, he was.
So really, you should have went ahead and said, you know, hindsight, 2020, the best thing to do is come back. But technically, when you see that arrow and it's gone through both lungs, that sucker is as dead as a hammer.
Man, you ought to have seen the arrow, though. If you'd have seen that arrow, you would have said it was an optical illusion, what we saw.
Well, you know, when that thing goes through a deer.
You know what I mean?
When it goes through a deer, you know, you're going to see that thing's going through hair on the way out. It's almost like you got a filter out there cleaning your arrow off.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, there's always a lot of nuance inside of these things that's hard to predict. James was saying every year something new happens. And there's always some drama, you know, and we always, you know, we almost always recover the animals, but there's none of them are the same. But I like those blood trails like Brent had that just, you know, you want to hit the center of the vitals for sure.
Did we ever track blood on his?
They heard it moan just right over there, so we were just looking for a bear.
Yeah.
And it wasn't very far.
You know, I just wonder if that moan is not when you get the perfect kill shot.
Yeah. I thought about that last night. What dictates a death moan? You know what Brent asked me on the way back? Brent and I, we were up till 4 a.m. last night. We had to go into town to get ice. And he said, what do you think about the death moan, Clay? And I didn't really know what he was getting at. And I just said, it's pretty incredible. There's only a couple of, as far as I know, there's only two big game animals that death moan. And one of them is some type of buffalo, maybe a Cape buffalo. They're the only big game animals that do that. And a death moan, for those who wouldn't know it, I found about 20% of bears that are killed death moan.
How would this be? Only 20% of them were shot where they're going to die within 40 yards. That bear knows absolutely he is a dead animal. I mean, you've hit him center or heart.
Right.
And he goes, hey, man, this is it, so I'm going to do my moan.
Yeah.
So where if you shoot just a little low, I mean, he doesn't even know. I don't think your bear knew that he was even hit.
Yeah.
I think you're on to something there because I had the beginnings of that thought and I didn't pull it all the way through, but I had the thought for the first time yesterday. I wonder if there is some type of, if you could really get the data to see, okay, on this type of shot, bears death moan, and on these type they don't. I do know for certain. Well, this is true, is that when they, like if an animal goes off and if it's like a liver shot and they die a couple hours later, which is not ideal, but it happens.
They're not going to moan.
No. They only moan on a
true
ten
kill. That first deer bear that you killed, I doubt if we did an autopsy on it, but do you remember you hit
it?
It's
just a perfect
It wasn't a heart shot, double lung.
Double lung.
That bear knew it was dead. I mean, it knew it was
and
dead.
And it ran 50 yards.
Or 30.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a little downhill, and he only got, I remember, 30 yards.
Maybe so.
It could have been 50. And I think that's it. I mean, if you kill that bear and you got the perfect shot, it's going to go, uh-oh, my clock has expired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the other guy doesn't even know he's hit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Brent was saying that he said it affected him to hear the bear do that, you know, because it really does bring to a very intense focus that you've taken the life of an animal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you shoot a deer and it runs off and dies out of sight. You have shot that animal. You've been a part of its death. You've been the cause of its death.
Mm-hmm.
But a big majestic beast like a bear shooting it and then it going out there. And if you've never heard it, you won't believe it when you do.
Yeah, I still haven't heard one.
Yeah. Oh, it's incredible. When James had to step out for a second there. James, have you heard one death moan, a bear death moan?
Yes. The first one I killed with a bow went about 30 yards just out of sight in death moan. Had two.
Mm.
Both of them were young boars.
Yeah.
They wasn't. The bigger ones didn't death moan, but the first one and third or fourth one moaned.
Yeah.
Huh. Brent said his.
Yeah, that's what we were just talking. James had to step away for a second. Yeah, we just went through all that. Yeah. We were talking about the death moan.
Multiple times.
Yeah. Well, it's a mysterious. It's mysterious. I would like to understand the biology of it, because there's a reason. Everything that happens in the natural world, there's a reason, there's a purpose behind it that can be explained in some way. And I've never heard much commentary on the death moan, but it certainly makes you be very aware that you've taken the life of an animal, and makes you want to utilize that animal to the highest levels of responsibility that we can as hunters. Mm. For sure. But well, incredible weekend. It's great to be able to spend it with all you guys. For yeah. sure. For sure. Yeah. James, any closing thoughts? You ready for next year?
Thinking about it.
We gonna do anything different next year?
Hope it's the same place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Same outcome, I hope.
Yeah.
Plenty of bears.
Well, there should be. Dad, closing thoughts?
Good hunt. Beautiful mm-hmm. photo.
Mm-hmm. Colby?
No, I'm just glad to have been able to participate this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
it really was good. Got to meet a lot of new, cool people. And
yeah.
Just have a good bear camp.
Good bear camp. Well, all right. We are... We're going to do the kids are going to continue to do some hunting this afternoon. And then I'm going to be hunting National Forest. So I haven't really hunted this weekend. I've just been kind of chauffeuring people mm-hmm. and skinning bears. That's the main thing. That's what I'm good at, just skinning bears. That's all.
Getting some practice in.
Yep. But,
takes
you know,
practice.
You know, yeah. They say, James, yeah. they say that bear grease helps arthritis and yeah. hands yeah. and stuff. And you, mine and yours particularly, our hands are, I kind of have a nice sheen on my hands right now from all the bear oil that's been on them.
Yeah.
It kind of makes you feel good.
Yeah.
I feel moisturized.
I think it's like rocket fuel for your soul to have your fingernails just full of bear grease.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, appreciate it, guys. Keep the wild places wild, because that's where the bears live.
Yep.